Work as a concept has changed dramatically and probably forever. Companies like Lyft, TaskRabbit, and Uber have brought the gig economy into the mainstream. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with an author and HR veteran on how not to just survive in the gig economy, but also how to thrive.
Hello and welcome, and thanks for listening as always. Work simply is not what it used to be. There are more opt-in options for gigs with companies like TaskRabbit, Uber, Instacart, with plenty more on the way, to be sure. While gigging can be flexible, it can also leave workers exposed to risk, you know, that whole healthcare thing. Most of the media focus around the gig economy, however, has been on the lower end of the skill spectrum. But what about the best-in-class professionals who have chosen an independent path?
And in fact, boomers have, until this year, been the largest cohort in the gig economy. So it's people who, potentially like myself, who had a successful career, sold my business, and then started consulting.
Coming up now is my chat with a human capital veteran, expert, and new author. Back in the day, we called it HR. Thriving in the gig economy for noobs as well as those already in it. That chat starts now.
Marion McGovern, I don't know that I have a title.
You're an author.
I'm an author. Okay. Author and expert on the gig economy.
Yes, you are. And you're an author several times over.
Correct. And a CEO and entrepreneur.
So you do all that stuff really well. Here's what I noticed you don't do very well. Retirement.
Yes. In fact, my original blog was called Flunking Retirement.
Right.
That could be another book.
Flunkingretirement.com. I love that URL. I love that was part of my homework for this.
I was surprised it was still available.
That's great. Thriving in the gig economy, how to capitalize and compete in the new world of work. Mary McGovern, that's her new book. Let's go macro first, okay? Let's define the gig economy. What's the difference between the gig economy and the sharing economy?
Gig is, according to the dictionary, work of uncertain duration. Term started being used in the 1920s around jazz musicians who were booking musical nights, and so they were gigs. The gig economy refers to the people and the companies that support work of uncertain duration. So that could be people who are independent web designers or drivers or folks who might do deliveries or people who help people sell companies. It's a whole range of skills and expertise.
Mm-hmm.
What it is not is the sharing economy, which you pointed out. It always makes me bristle when I hear someone talking about the gig economy and they mention Airbnb. Because Airbnb, I appreciate that it takes work to be a host, but if I want to rent your apartment in Rotterdam because it has an amazing view and it's available when I'm there, the fact that you do any work to prepare it is incidental. So since that involves a physical asset, that is the sharing economy, not the gig economy, because a gig, by definition,
right,
refers to work on certain duration. You're buying someone's work.
Right. I think that the gig economy is something that's maybe difficult to understand for people my age and older. Are you finding that in your experience and when you were writing this book?
Not that they're finding it hard to understand it. It's that they potentially don't identify that they're part of it. And in fact, boomers have, until this year, been the largest cohort in the gig economy. So it's people who, potentially like myself, who had a successful career, sold my business, and then started consulting. Or retirees who decide to do this and that, drive or walk dogs on the side.
Right.
So there are boomers, as I say, until this year became, they're still 33%. And millennials are now 40%. So millennials are jumping up there. But I think there's an aspect of, okay, I've been this financial consultant. I'm not in the gig economy. Well, you're doing gigs. So I can't tell you. I actually, some of the senior professionals who endorsed my book, one of them kind of called me after the fact and said, oh my God, I had no idea you were talking about me.
Uh-huh. Isn't this a little bit fraught? Like the gig economy, in your book, you say over the past 5 years, things have dynamically changed in this aspect. Can't that also be seen as a disintegration of capitalism? Or is this just a shifting of things? Because you're working without a net sometimes in the gig economy. I don't expect everybody to get a gold watch like we used to after 40 years with the same company. But at the same time, there is a certain security that comes with a little bit of investment help with 401ks, a little bit of help on health care. Now they're working without a net. Did you find that to be a problem when you were researching?
You know, people have always been working that way. I think the challenge, and again, why some people of a certain, you know, age cohort might not identify with the gig economy is the focus now on the technology that is delivering the marketplaces. You know, people have been moonlighting, if you will, or working independently on gigs for a long time. I started my company, M Squared Consulting, in 1988, mm-hmm. matching consultants to projects. And, you know, heck, the internet didn't even exist back then. So, of course, I'm dating myself right now. But people have always worked independently and figured it out. But now with the focus on these large technology companies like Uber and Lyft and Upwork and, you know, a whole host of them. In fact, there are hundreds and hundreds of them, some of them special purpose. Like there's a digital platform just for makeup artists, for example.
Right.
The technology is putting the focus on more the short-term on-demand side of it. So the idea of people, you know, boom, showing up at my door with groceries or showing up to be able to deliver my dry cleaning mm-hmm. or of course, drivers.
Right.
So that part of the gig economy is getting a lot of focus now because that is creating this opportunity for people to do very short-term tasks.
The shorter terms are more augmenting something that might be a main hustle, let's say.
Correct. In fact, I talk in my book about sort of the three economies, if you will, the gig economy, the sharing economy, and the on-demand economy, which is how I look at that part of the world. And there's some intersection of all of them, but they're not synonymous.
You mentioned something I'd like to jump off on, if we could, the digital platform that you mentioned for the makeup artist. Let's say somebody wants to enter the gig economy, right? Really looking for something more than a 20-minute task here and there, not a mm-hmm. task rabbit kind of thing. What's the best way to do it? Is the digital platform a way to go? And can some of them be trusted more than others?
You know, as part of the book, I joined probably a dozen. The ones I most qualified for, some of them probably shouldn't take me, but they did anyway. The truth of the matter is it's not automatic. So, you know, don't sit back and wait. It is another way to potentially get business. But you have to work them. Algorithms finding you.
Right.
So in order for them to find you, you have to apply to a lot of things. You have to work their system. You have, you know, if there are ways that you can get more attention, like some of them have advisory councils. One platform where they have these advisory councils where I'm in the cybersecurity one, the governance one, and the HR one. And so I submit articles or I attend little meetings or something. But part of it is for them to somehow get a sense of who I am, and I apply for things mm-hmm. because then theoretically, based on what might go some direction, you know, some steps forward, they have a sense of, oh, okay, that set of skills that this person brings, mm-hmm. you know, fills X box. Some of them have strong vetting categories or structures where you add more information about yourself. So the more information their platform has, the better off you are, I think.
Okay.
But some of them just use a LinkedIn profile. So for example, I have been the chair of the board of an international humanitarian nonprofit organization. So we send reconstructive surgeons to help the poor around the world. Research International is the name of this wonderful organization. So that appears in my LinkedIn profile. From one of these platforms, I kept getting projects to go dig wells for water in Uganda.
Uh-huh.
Now, granted, I get how they pulled that out.
Sure.
But that's not me.
We're speaking with Mary McGovern. She's the author of the new book, Thriving in the Gig Economy. Great subtitle here, How to Capitalize and Compete in the New World of Work. And the fact that that subtitle has to be there tells me something about this new world of work. It's really competitive. You almost have to feel like you are an expert in something. Do you need to be narrow and deep and proven and have bona fides in order to get a good gig in this economy?
You know, I think it depends on your area of expertise. So in some cases, there are some platforms, in fact, there's a very interesting one for creatives called Working Not Working, where they have two categories. They have their members, who are people who have been vetted, and only 10% of their applicants become invited to be members. But then they have something called contenders. And in that particular platform, the common factor is that they only deal with talent areas that have portfolios. So copywriters, illustrators, animators, portfolios.
I see.
And so a jury of the members, you know, 200 people in these different disciplines, kind of like the Academy Awards, they decide who gets in.
I've been calling it kind of offhandedly the 1099 economy. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the difference between the 1099 and the W-2 and how you kind of approached it in the book.
This has been a big problem for a long time. And part of me is really happy that there are these cases with Uber and now Grubhub about, are these individuals on the platform working for them, independent contractors or employees? The problem is the law is very ambiguous. So the law governing who's an employee and who's an employer actually dates back to British master servant law that happened after the bubonic plague, because so many people were dead. It was like, well, who's the master, who's the servant? And that's where it comes from. So there are 20 things that define whether you're an employee or not. Like, do you bring your own tools? Can you have a financial loss? I mean, there are all these things. It's not that any one of them matter. And it even says in the IRS code that just because they're out there, you know, we might use different ones for this and different ones for that. The ambiguity is a big problem.
Yeah.
It really comes down to direction and control. So if you're directing someone and controlling them, potentially you're their employee. The argument that Uber has offered, and I'm not an employment lawyer in the spirit of full disclosure, is that they're not controlling their workers because they can work whenever they want. They can decide to, you know, to drive whenever they feel like.
It's very laissez-faire.
The argument against them is because they have to use the app and that Uber sets the price, that they are being controlled. So the issue for individuals is really understanding the implications for yourself. Because if you are working as a 1099, you have an additional responsibility of paying quarterly taxes.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there are business expenses that you can't deduct as an employee.
Right.
As an employee, you can't deduct going to your place of work and, you know, parking or whatever, because that is what it is. As a 1099, you can deduct going to your client. So, you know, there are things like that that make a big difference for how you, you know, run and manage your business, which quite frankly is another issue of people becoming more educated about how to manage. So I think in part because of the book, I wish I had like kept better notes, but I ask every Uber driver that I take, you know, so what's your deal? Do you do this full time? You know, and you know, I've had masseuses. I've had a guy who makes money playing fantasy football. But there was a teacher once who said that, you know, he'd been a W-2 employee all his life and he really wished that someone had given him some help on how do I make money as a 1099 guy? Because he knew he could deduct his gas, but he didn't know that he could deduct part of the new set of tires that he got.
It seems like a good way to wrap would be future looking. What about 5 years from now? Is it going to be exponential? Is it going to be even more disrupted? Because right now it feels like the Wild West.
There are experts out there, players in the field, who view it as in time everything will be delivered by the computer. The example given to me by the CEO of WorkMarket was, think Star Trek. If they need somebody, they don't go through LinkedIn. All of a sudden, you know, the person that's going to redo their phasers is on the bridge.
Right.
I don't know that it's going to get there so quickly. Mm. I think there have to be developments, though, to reduce the frictions now in how talent moves. Obviously, the issue of benefits is huge, and the notion of these employment structures is a big deal, and there are efforts to look at portable benefits, to look at ideas of becoming a certified self-employed person so that you don't have to go through this, am I an independent contractor or not? The proposal has been that the Small Business Administration would certify you. It would be a 3-year certification.
Interesting.
And yeah, I actually am a big supporter of this. So, but it's just one of many models that's out there.
So that using the one that you like and the one that intrigues me, you'd kind of like be your own LLC without having to incorporate?
Right. And there would be some process that you would file that would show you had multiple clients, et cetera, et cetera. But you could become certified self-employed and you wouldn't have to go through this bother of am I an employee or not.
That would clear some decks, wouldn't it, when it comes to
Absolutely.
Taxes, when it comes to the ambiguity we talked about, the
Absolutely.
20 tips from the IRS?
Absolutely. Because there are certainly the cases where people, you know, sign a contract that say they understand they're an independent contractor, and then the contract ends and they sue the company for unemployment. Well, you know, if you're a contractor, you don't get unemployment, which is another thing to understand.
Right.
Unemployment insurance is only for employees.
Right, right.
So that would sort of clear up that mess.
Hmm.
But there are interesting innovators already coming into the field. Like another thing that's been very hard for independents is to get professional liability insurance. And there's a great company called Bunker Insurance, where it was an insurance executive who saw this problem in the market, and he's created a structure for both companies who need to get that professional liability for their contractors or individual contractors, where they can get cost-effective insurance coverage that it's kind of like the malpractice insurance for consultants, if you
right,
will.
Right, exactly.
So people are stepping into the market. You know, I have great optimism about the innovators out there. There's another cool company called Shift Pixie, terrible name, but they are in a part of the economy that people don't even think of as the gig economy, where it's the workers in fast food restaurants and food service. And, you know, for a lot of them, it's hard to get a job, cobbled together a full-time job as, you know, a dishwasher at Denny's or McDonald's. And what Shift Pixie does is it takes all these people, gives them an app and says, okay, you've got 10 hours over here at Denny's. You got 20 hours over there. You got 10 hours over there. We are your employer and we will give you the benefits. We'll just tell you where to go.
Mm.
But how cool is that?
That is very cool.
So there are people out there that look and see the barriers that are out there, and they're figuring out cool ways to work around them.
Marion, thank you so much for coming in today. That was Marion McGovern. She's the author of Thriving in the Gig Economy, How to Capitalize and Compete in the New World of Work. There are links to her book and other gig economy sources at kgoradio.com/techonomics. Just look for the article that goes with this week's show and get gigging. Coming up after the break, we stick with the gig, this time with a workplace and placement executive who's been researching some best practices for the gig economy. We also drift into how taxes and gigging work now and what may be coming.
There's going to be, Jason, a lot of different stuff that evolves from the tax proposal, because it's going to be how the Affordable Care Act is affected, what's deducted for what you can deduct as a 1099 independent contractor.
That's next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please stick around.